Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Hey Fightin' Podcast, the official podcast of LSU football. As always, Cody Worsham, digital media reporter for LSU Athletics, here with my dog Shadow, who is eating his kibble in the background, crunching very loudly from my home on a Thursday night. I know this podcast is coming to you a little bit later than usual. That was intentional. One, the bye week obviously gave me a little bit of a personal break. I put out another episode of Boot Up the LSU Basketball Podcast. If you're an LSU basketball fan and you haven't listened to that podcast yet, go check it out. The other reason for the intentional break, of course, was that LSU had quite the newsy week in terms of football, in terms of personnel. As you probably know by now, Miles Brennan is not playing on Saturday. The story all week, the big story all week, was who's going to play quarterback, who's going to start at quarterback. I didn't want to put out a podcast on a Tuesday that by the time Friday rolled around was so dated. So I wanted to wait until Thursday night when Coach O had his press conference, and he had his Thursday press conference. Now, before I get into the details, I do want to point out, you can probably tell from the episode description here, I do have Zach Von Rosenberg on the podcast today. He sat down with me earlier today about 11 o'clock on Thursday, or noon on Thursday, and we talked about his story, his career, and then also just some relevant things to this team, some things that he's learned through his long athletic career that really apply to this team. So it's a good interview to kind of get to know Zach and know his story a little bit, but also with some topics that are relevant to this team. But back to the news at hand. Coach O did name a starting quarterback today, and it was a close race all week, but today he announced that TJ Finley will get the start. Here's what Coach O said about TJ Finley and why he won the job.
We had an outstanding team meeting at the beginning of the week. I told our team, TJ and Max, we'll give them a shot. Both of them, we believe in them. I think both of them are going to be NFL quarterbacks. The team loved both of those guys. It was a very close battle. But at the end, we felt that TJ nudged Max just a little. I wish I could start too. But TJ's going to be the starter there. We're going to give him time to get his work done. I told Max I want to play him. But, you know, it all depends on the flow of the game. But right now, TJ is going to start, and Max is going to go in the game when available, and hope that they can play the same amount of reps. I don't know if that's going to happen. It all depends on the flow of the game.
So it was a close call between TJ Finley and Max Johnson, and as Coach O reiterated there, and he's going to reiterate often, I think both guys are going to play. Now, the only exception to that rule would be a good exception, and that would be if TJ Finley comes out with his hair on fire and throws for a touchdown pass on every drive, and he's playing so well you can't take him out. If that's not the case, even if he's playing well, I think even if he's playing well, but maybe, you know, one touchdown in three drives or whatever, I think Max Johnson's still going to get a look. Here's Coach O talking about TJ Finley, how he's developed, how he's lost weight at LSU. And there's an Instagram notification that you just heard on my computer. But here's Coach O talking about TJ Finley.
He lost some weight. He must have lost about 20 pounds, maybe more. He's got great shape. TJ's a hard worker. He's very cerebral. He's always studying football. He's always had a cannon for an arm. It was more or less putting a little touch and more or less reading the defense and the accuracies. I think he's come a long way. Now, live bullets are going to be flying Saturday. They're going to come after him. Let's find out. But I do believe he'll do well. Both of them will.
All right, before I talk about TJ Finley, I sent out some feelers for questions during the middle of Coach O's press conference, thinking that I might get a little bit of reaction there, and I did. Will Cupid sent in a voice message. I always appreciate the voice messages that you guys send in. The link is in the episode description that you can send in. Here's Will. His question is, of course, about who else? TJ Finley.
Hey, Cody. This is Will Cupid. Just heard the announcement that TJ Finley will be the starting quarterback for the Tigers this weekend. Just wanted to know what your initial reaction was, and also, how do you think he'll fare in his first start as an LSU Tiger?
I want to talk about TJ Finley and Max Johnson and what I've seen from them. Now, there's guys out there that have seen these guys in high school that have seen them play more than I have. The advantage that I have, I guess, is that I've seen them in practice, I've seen them in scrimmages, and this year all that's been closed to the media. And so what I've seen made today's news not really a surprise to me. I always kind of thought TJ Finley would be the most natural replacement for Miles Brennan. And what I mean by that is when I was out there for the scrimmage, TJ was doing more things like Miles than Max was. Now, the scrimmage that I went to was the second scrimmage. The offense had a really good day. Miles, I think, threw three or four touchdowns. TJ threw, I think, at least one, if not two touchdowns. Him and I think he hit Trey Palmer for one and maybe Kayshon Boutte for another. But TJ made some really nice throws that day, and I was really impressed with how comfortable he looked in the pocket, how calm he was in the pocket. He's 6'6". He stands really tall. He's got a loose arm, if that makes sense. He looks very, very natural throwing a football. Didn't see him zipping a lot of throws like you would think Miles does sometimes. But he had a good touch on the ball, which surprised me that Coach O was saying that, you know, in that clip I played earlier, that TJ Finley had to develop the touch. Maybe that's a thing from high school. I didn't see much of him other than some highlight tapes in his film. But he had a really nice touch this fall. And so I was really impressed with his ability to stand in the pocket, look across the field, throw the football on time, on target. He looked much older than a freshman to me, both physically and mentally. You know, I use this example with Miles a lot. And Joe, too. Joe Burrow, his first year at LSU, and Miles, his first couple years at LSU. I'd go out to the scrimmages, and they were a little more calm in the scrimmages because you can't actually sack the quarterback. But if they would get a little pressure, you could kind of see them get a little tense. You could see their feet moving a little fast. And then, obviously, in the games, that manifested in either taking sacks or leaving the pocket too soon. You could just sense that little bit of discomfort. TJ, I never sensed that discomfort with him watching him practice. Very, very calm in the pocket. Never seemed bothered by what was around him, even though he was getting some pressure at times. So I think that's a good thing that bodes well for his chances to throw the ball. But the reason that I kind of thought he would win out for the starting job, at least this week, was that I think he can step into the offense that LSU has installed a little more readily than Max Johnson. Now, what Max brings to the table, and the reason I think he's going to see the field regardless, is he makes a lot of plays with his legs. And not to tip LSU's hand here, because I haven't been at practice the last couple weeks, but when I was at practice in the preseason, Max ran a lot. It was hard to get a full read on Max because it was non-contact with the quarterback. So if LSU would run, like, say, a zone read or an RPO, Max could run the ball, but the defense couldn't tackle him. So he could pick up a few yards here and there, but the defense couldn't tackle him. It was hard to read. Was that a good play? Was that the defense not pursuing hard? You know, it was just hard to tell when the training wheels are on, to use an analogy. So I didn't get a full read on him. And he didn't throw the ball as much as TJ did in the scrimmage that I saw. Now, the few times he threw it, I thought he threw some nice balls. You can see the talent there. You can see the arm strength. But it was clear that LSU was much more willing to call plays that were designed as runs for him than for Finley. So it was almost, I don't want to say it was two different offenses, but it was certainly two different looking offenses. So that's why I felt like the most natural transition is from one pocket passer to another. Miles is a pocket guy. TJ is a pocket guy. And Max is a little bit more of a dual threat guy that can get outside the pocket and make some plays with his legs. So we'll see what happens on Saturday. I'm rooting for TJ Finley to play well, but I'm rooting for Max Johnson to get a chance to and play well. And hopefully Coach O comes out of the game with a good problem, and that's that he's got three really good quarterbacks, and he's got to figure out when to bring Miles Brennan back and in terms of his health. Speaking of that, here's Coach O talking about his health, and I'll finish my thought, and then I'll play the clip of Coach O talking about Miles' health. But hopefully after the game on Saturday against South Carolina, LSU wins, LSU plays well, and the two quarterbacks both play well, and then Coach O's got a three-quarterback problem on his hands now. I'm sure when Miles is healthy and ready to go, he'll get the start again. But hopefully those guys play so well on Saturday that it makes Coach O's decision a little bit harder moving forward. Speaking of that, here's Coach O talking about Miles Brennan, where he is health-wise right now.
Well, you know, he threw the ball a little bit yesterday. He was out yesterday, wasn't full speed throwing it. He's going to dress out for the game I don't think he's going to play. And, you know, we just got to wait and see next week. I mean, this is a wait and see thing. You know, the first week I thought he'd be ready. On a Monday, he wasn't. So we become patient, and let's wait and see when he's going to be ready.
Here's, I'm going to play them back to back, two clips. One is Coach O talking about just how close it was between Max Johnson and TJ Finley. And then the second clip is on Max Johnson, his reaction to not winning the starting job.
Yeah, it could have been the flip of a coin, honestly. That's how close it was. And TJ may have had one or two better plays in third down than Max did. That's all that was. And I just want to give them both a chance. But it all depends on the flow of the game. Should you might get in the game and TJ gets hot, I'm not going to take him out. We're not going to be impatient with him either. But I do want to play both. I want to see what both of them can do. Max took it like a man. He was fine. Him and TJ are friends. But, you know, I told him, I have to disappoint one of you. I recruited both of you. I wish I could start both of them. And it was a hard decision, man. I'm telling you, it was really close. We could have went either way with it. So he's fine with it. But I did tell him, you know, hey, just because TJ is starting right now, that doesn't mean Max is not going to do a better job. If Max does a better job and Miles Brennan's hurt next week, he's going to start. It's all about competition.
All right, let's get to some more questions. Taylor Edmonds sent in a question a couple of weeks ago, I think after the Missouri game. I see this is from October 10th, and we are well past October 10th at this point. That's 12 days ago. So his question is about third down problems.
So it's obvious that Miles can get it done, but we cannot convert a third down to save our lives. What do you think the problem is there? Are we really missing Joe Brady that much that we can't convert a single third down? Or is it something schematically? And why do you think we went away from carrying the ball with John Emery like we did last game? I mean, he gashed him and we came out and, I mean, we ran the ball four times in the first half. If you take away Miles's three rushes, just curious what you think about that.
Yeah, Taylor, thanks for the questions. I went back and looked at the third downs against Missouri, and it's a season-long problem for LSU right now. I think they're 9 of 39. They're toward the bottom of the country in third down conversion. I think it's a couple things. One, I think Joe made LSU so good on third downs last year because how many did he pick up with his legs? Like when things broke down, he could go get you 7-8 yards with his legs really quick. And I think teams aren't afraid of Miles doing that. So I'm interested to see what TJ brings to the table with his legs. Certainly, I think Max can bring something with his legs on third down. I think they've taken that element away, and so it's changed what LSU needs to do on third down. I think it's been a little bit different in every game. The Missouri game, to me, LSU put itself in such bad positions on third downs. I believe the average, I'm doing this off the top of my head, I'll double check it and correct it on Twitter if I'm wrong. I believe the average third down distance for LSU against Missouri was 3rd and 9.7 yards. And first of all, that's too far. That's very, very difficult to continually pick up 3rd and 9.7s. But LSU threw it on all of those third downs. They threw it on every third down. So there's a problem right there. And you touched on the run game. I'll talk about that in a second. They threw on every third down, and it was an average of 3rd and 9.7. But the average distance of target on the passes was 3rd and 3. It was 3 yards. So if you've got to get 9.7 yards and you're only throwing it 3 yards, you're asking receivers to do a lot of work after the catch. And that's something that I think LSU's got to fix. You got to throw more to the sticks, past the sticks. They had a couple drops on third downs that hurt them when they actually did throw to the sticks or past the sticks. They had a couple drops in the flat on shorter targets where guys had space to run into. But I think there's some schematic things that LSU is going to look at with this extra week off after the Florida game was postponed and see that they can do differently. I mentioned the running game, and I think this ties into third down. I think this ties into everything with the offense. The offense has been really good, but Miles stepping back, true freshman quarterback, you're going to count on whether it's TJ or Max. You're going to have to run the ball more. And I think running the ball, especially on first down, is going to be huge. John Emery is averaging, I think, like 7 yards a carry on first downs this year. I believe it's 98 yards on 13 carries. He's getting more yards after contact per carry than just about any running back in the SEC, if not number one. I think he's getting 0.44 missed tackles per carry. So basically every other carry, he's making somebody miss. You got to get him involved. I know you like Chris Curry. I know you like Tydeavis Price. I think those guys have big roles to play on this team. But if I'm, from my limited vantage point and just looking at the stats, I'm more of a stats guy. If I'm giving the ball to somebody first on Saturday, it's John Emery. I think he can make the most plays the most amount of time. There's a role for Chris Curry. There's a role for Ty Davis Price. And who knows, maybe they step up Saturday and they end up leading the charge. And then you can feed them and feed the hot hand in that way. Because I think LSU is going to have to use multiple running backs with true freshman quarterbacks to make it easier. But John Emery's got that extra gear. And his ability on first down, the way that he's picked up first downs, he is first in the SEC in percentage of runs that end in a touchdown or first down. I think 9 of his 21 carries this year have either been a first down or a touchdown. So feed four, let him eat, and I think that can go a long way for LSU's offense. And I would say that's true regardless of if LSU lost my train of thought as I was pulling up more questions on Instagram. I think that's true regardless of if LSU was playing Miles Brennan or true freshman at quarterback. I think you've got to feed John. It makes the offense easier, makes it flow a little bit better, and I think it's gonna make things better regardless of who's behind center. So a couple more questions from Instagram. A lot of you guys ask questions for me to ask Zach. Unfortunately, I've already interviewed Zach, so I can't ask him these questions. Grace Kerr says, no question, just excited. I appreciate that, Grace. Ashley Murky asked, favorite TV show, songs, movie when y'all were 15? I can't speak for Zach. Maybe I can pass that along. Favorite TV show when I was 15? I was super into Lost when Lost was originally on ABC. Like, I was watching Lost every week. I was on the message boards. Like, I remember in high school during my study hall period, sitting at the computers. We didn't have laptops in school back then. And like pouring through Lost forums on theories of like how Lost would end. And of course, Lost ended terribly. They'd have been much better off if they just would have gone with one of the answers from those forums, because they were amazing. Favorite songs? What was I into when I was 15? Like, probably like Jimmy Eat World. I was probably really into Jimmy Eat World when I was 15. That was right around when I got into Kanye West too. Not the old Kanye. I mean, not the new Kanye, the old Kanye. Old Kanye was legit. Let's see. A couple other questions. Maybe I can get back on football. Stephen Love on Instagram asked, do you think we should stick with one running back and substitute less on offense to create more tired defenses like last year? That's a good question, Stephen. Last year, LSU was really good at the no huddle, not subbing guys in and out, not allowing the defense to sub. I don't think you can do that with this team yet. Maybe you can get there. The reason you could do that with last year's team is because you had three receivers in Jamar, Terrace, and Justin who you could line up anywhere. You had a tight end in Thaddeus who you could line up anywhere. And you had a running back in Clyde who was just as much of a threat catching the ball from a split out position as he was from the backfield. Don't think this team is that multiple. They may be. Eric Gilbert, I think, is very multiple. You can line him up at tight end. You can line him up at receiver. You can move him in a number of ways. I don't think the running backs are as multiple. I haven't seen those guys split out and thought that the defense was worried about the threat that they provided. And the receiver spot, I think you're still top heavy with Terrace and you're looking for somebody else to step up. And so I think until you get to that point, you can't. But maybe it's something to try, because LSU definitely wore defenses out last year. And it gave them fits. And I think it's something they can get back to. Do I have any more questions? Eric Hart asks, what low basketball shoe is good dad athleisure wear? And I think that was probably for Zach as much as me. I love the Air Max. Got a Air Max that I love to wear for that specific purpose. I don't see any more questions. One more thing that I want to talk about, and this is not related to questions, and we'll get to the interview with Zach as I try to get my dog to stop giving himself a bath over here. Please, Shadow, stop doing that. People don't like the sound of that. One more thing that I want to touch on. I mentioned Kayshon Boutte, and I think this is a week where you're going to see some young guys really get a crack on both sides of the ball. I think offensively, Kayshon Boutte is a guy that you'll see a good bit of and a guy that could get a good look. Defensively, I think Josh White. Defensively, I think it's actually all three levels. I think B.J. Ojulari is going to get a lot of reps at end. I think Josh White is going to get a lot of reps at linebacker. I think Jordan Toles is going to get a lot of reps at safety. And you might be at the point in time where those guys, and remember, the trick with the freshmen this year, Zach talked about this on his media session this week that I'm not playing audio of on this show, but in his media session this week, he talked about how the freshmen are still a little bit further behind than previous years' freshmen would be because of COVID, because of, you know, the adjustments that caused and the lack of preparation on field that those guys got. Hopefully this bye week helped with that as they were able to kind of catch up and speed up the learning curve. And I know that's an issue for every program in the country, but especially when you're at a program that lost more players than anybody else in the country to the NFL draft, you had some guys opt out. There is a big lack of continuity. And I think the freshman learning curve is a little bit steeper this year, hopefully not for quarterback, but especially this week. But I think for those other guys, it's just been a little bit steeper because of the lack of on-field prep time because of COVID. I'm hoping that the weeks of practice they've had so far, the week that they had this week with Florida getting postponed, was enough to catch them up. But I think you will see a lot of young guys get a look this week, and that's exciting. It's going to be exciting to see what Jordan Tolles can do at safety. Super athletic guy. Could be a big playmaker for LSU back there. Josh White at the linebacker spot, which has been a spot where LSU has not gotten the production that it needs so far this year. Any competition there is going to help. And then Bijan Ojulari has been fantastic at defensive end. The only thing is just get him more snaps. He's been a number two guy, a backup guy that's, you know, played maybe 30% of the snaps this year. Let's see what he can do with 50, 60% of the snaps. I'm excited to see those young guys. But let's now turn to an old guy in Zach Von Rosenberg. Sat down with Zach before LSU's game with South Carolina. It was a good conversation. Remember, LSU, South Carolina, 6 o'clock. The game got moved. It is a home game. If you can get out to Tiger Stadium, please come out. Got to get that place feeling like it's 100,000, even though it's only 25. And Zach was gracious enough to give me a little bit of time, talk about this season, how it's so different from previous seasons, his journey, what he's learned on his journey from being a minor league baseball player who, you know, got drafted out of high school, 6th round in the MLB draft, $1.2 million signing bonus, failed at that level the first time he's ever really failed, and then had the audacity to write into LSU and say, hey, I want to be your national championship winning quarterback. That's right, he wanted to be a quarterback, even though he didn't play quarterback in high school at Zachary High School, where he graduated from, which is the audacity to do that, to believe that you could do that. It's incredibly audacious. Some people might mock it, but for Zach, it was the start of the path. It turned him into a national championship winning punter at LSU. So I think there's a lot to learn from Zach's story, and there's a lot to learn from failing, from leaning into failure, is something we talk about, from picking yourself up when you are down and having the audacity to believe that you can get where you want to go. And I think that's an important lesson for this year's team. They're 1-2. It's not where they want to be, but they have time to lean into the failure they've experienced already so that they don't experience any more failure moving forward, to learn from the failure they've experienced already so they don't experience any more failure moving forward. So Zach is the perfect guy to embody that. I'm going to go ahead and throw it to that interview now. You won't hear from me other than the questions that I'm asking Zach the rest of the way. So until next time, thanks for listening and enjoy my conversation with LSU senior punter Zach Von Rosenberg. All right, good to always catch up with Zach Von Rosenberg, LSU punter. Zach, we've done this on the podcast before. This is slightly different format because we'll use it for the TV show too. But I want to start, and we've talked about your story. We've gone through some of the bare bones of how you went from professional pitcher to LSU punter. I want to dig into your story a little bit, though. And I want to start with the letter or the email that you wrote Sam Nader when you finished your baseball career.
Yeah, it was that was a weird time for me because I was still in the phase of, all right, what am I going to do? Kind of similar to how, you know, when you graduate college, that first year or right when you graduate, it's like, all right, now what? That was the exact phase that I was in post-baseball. And I felt like I had the ability to play football here. And I started asking around, and I didn't really have too many connections with LSU football at the time. And I can't remember who exactly I asked who to get in touch with, but the name Sam Nader came up. And sure enough, I looked him up in the LSU directory, got his email, and ended up drafting that email. I think it was in a Tiger Rag magazine, but I really put my heart into that message because I was writing out exactly what I wanted to happen, and obviously that didn't happen. I became a punter. I didn't play quarterback, but I wrote in that email that I wanted to win a national championship at LSU. And fast forward 4 years later, we sure did it. And it's crazy. Speaking things into existence is a thing. And for me and in my life, it 100% has been a thing. And it's something that I'll continue to do because it's been working for me. I've failed and I've failed a lot, but with the failures has come a lot of success too.
I want to revisit speaking things into existence a little bit later, but I want to dig in on part of that letter that you wrote, or the email. I keep calling it a letter. It's an email that you wrote him. In that email, you basically said, as you alluded to there, that you felt you could be a quarterback that led LSU to the national championship, right? Mm-hmm. And if I'm correct, did you play quarterback in high school?
I didn't at Zachary, no.
Okay. Basically, they didn't want you to play football because you're so good at baseball. Is that right?
My parents and I kind of, especially my parents pushed me in that direction. Like, Zach, like, you're taking a lot of risks playing football.
Yeah.
You know, you've always excelled in baseball, and it's your sport. And I agreed with them. And I did end up coming back to punt my junior, senior year at Zachary. But, yeah, no, I didn't. But I felt that I had the maturity to play quarterback. And I felt like I would have eventually after I got in the weight room, I'd have the physicality too as well. That didn't happen, and I'm okay with it. I got to, I'm just here and happy that I got to enjoy what I've got to see here at LSU since I've been here.
What I love about that, and I'm serious when I say this, is that takes a lot of confidence to put that into writing, to speak that into existence. I think one thing that keeps people from speaking things into existence is because they think in their head it sounds foolish, or if they say it, they'll be embarrassed if it doesn't pan out. But as you are kind of the perfect example of, once you do put it out there, things tend to kind of gravitate towards that, whether it's an energy that you're generating or whatever the science behind it is or the metaphysics behind it. But that's the confidence that you had in that moment, which you've talked about before. That was a low moment for you when you finished playing baseball. And I think a lot of people would have had no self-confidence or very little self-confidence to put that out there. Hey, I'm going to be a national championship winner for your program if you take me. But you did. Where did that confidence come from?
I think it's something that's been driven into me my whole life. My dad's ex-military. My mom was a great athlete. My older brother, Josh, was the one who pushed me the most out of anybody. And they saw something when I was a kid, and they were, instrumental in my ability to say, I can do this. I can do this. If I told my parents something, they never said, oh, you need to be careful. I had one of my teachers in elementary school say that. I told her I wanted to be a professional baseball player, and she said, now, Zach, you need to make good grades, and, you need to be realistic here. And I still remember that because that bothered me for a long time. I don't want to out her. She'd probably be so upset. But she was doing the right thing. Yeah. She was telling a 7-year-old kid something that they needed to hear. Yeah. But if anything, it helped me and it motivated me. But with that, when it comes to goal setting, no goal is too high. If you know your skill set, if you set a goal that's too lofty, okay, fine. But if you're actively, daily trying to pursue that goal, that dream, you're going to excel. You're going to, even if you don't get to that goal per se, like for me it was quarterback at LSU, I didn't get there. But my ceiling was much higher because of the goal I set. And you can have a checklist, and if you're a type of person that can't have the, if you don't get there, you're like, it's doom and gloom. No, that's not the case. You can have goals along the way. If I do this, if I get to this point, you can have a checklist.
Yeah.
But for me, it's just like, I need to set the bar here, and however close I get to that bar, it is what it is. And but I'm not gonna dwell and be sad about what's happened in the past, because I can't change the past. I can change the present, and I can change the future, and that's it.
I feel like that's a super interesting mentality, that lofty goal setting, not too unrealistic, but certainly high. I feel like that was a real characteristic of a lot of guys that have been through this program, Coach O being one. I mean, if you'd have told somebody the day after he got fired from Ole Miss, like, hey, I'm going to be the head coach at LSU, we're going to win a national championship, he got laughed at, but he set that goal and he got it. And I think your story is a great example of that. Just to kind of backtrack a little bit, just to kind of get us back up to speed, give us like the quick version of your baseball career, the story of how you went from being drafted to sending that email to Sam Nader, sort of the process, that the winding road that led you to LSU.
The cliff notes.
Yeah.
Well, I got drafted 2009 out of Zachary High School. I immediately went to rookie ball. And then I had 1 year in rookie ball. The following year, I went to spring training, went to short season, which was in State College, Pennsylvania. Then went to low A the following year, repeated that level because I didn't pitch as well as I could have. And then I kind of had lingering injuries that year and the following year. And then ultimately culminating in 2014, where I was putting together good outings and what Coach O calls stacking days. I was stacking days together, but then I would have a setback. And that was a constant theme in my career. I would be doing well, and then all of a sudden something would happen. That streak ends. And again, at the end of the day, there's a lot of guys like that in baseball. I just wasn't the one that could overcome them in terms of my career. And I really, like I said, even talking about it now, it's still like, man, like I can't believe I wasn't able to do it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, all that struggle probably allowed me to succeed here. And because when you struggle like that and when you don't, baseball was easy for me until I was 19 years old. It was a game. And I, every level, my dad, training me, it was an easy game to be good at because all I wanted to do was be better than everybody around me, and I put in the work to be that way. But once you get to that level where everybody's good, everybody's put in that work, and everybody's put in the effort, there's a lot of, I don't want to say luck involved, but you got to catch some breaks along the way.
Yeah.
Like the guy who backed up Derek Jeter in New York for however long, 10 years, he was stuck. He wasn't getting to the big leagues. And I'm sure, I don't know if that was one guy specifically, but imagine being stuck in an organization like that, backing up Derek Jeter. You're never going to play.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the luck side of it. You have to get in the right moment, the right team to get your shot. And a lot of guys, things are better now where players are traded and free agency has gotten so much better so guys don't get blocked up like that. Mm-hmm. But with me, I always go back to this. I just wasn't good enough. I didn't do what I needed to do to be a career baseball player. And had that not happened, I probably wouldn't. None of this would have happened. So one thing led to another, and I just kept my same work ethic along the way and got here and got to have success. And I'm blessed. I can't complain about that.
Do you know who Kumail Nanjiani is, the comedian?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. He's a comedian actor. He was on a podcast I was listening to recently, and he was talking about he basically was like a comedian who's now like really buff, like bulked up, like cut. And he was talking about weightlifting and his breakthrough with weightlifting, and he used to be kind of like a skinny, scrawny comedian type, was that he learned you have to kind of lean into the resistance. You have to lean into the failure aspect of it to break through. You have to deal with the days where you're sore. You have to deal with the days where you can't lift what you wanted to lift. And I was thinking about that concept of leaning into failure as you were talking. And, some people fail and they run from it. They go to another. I mean, your first failure in athletics, like you could have just, okay, I'm going to go work at X, Y, and Z company. Like I'm sure you had some job offer to go work at wherever in sales or something.
Right.
But you didn't. And you had this sports bug and you leaned into that. And last year's team was full of guys. This program's been full of guys. To kind of catch us up to current speed with this year's team, I don't know if this year's team has a lot of those guys that have had to learn from failure. So as you guys are slow out of the gates right now and trying to get to where you want to be, have you had those conversations with your teammates? Like, hey, I know we're 1-2. We would much rather be 3-0. But this is reality. Let's learn from this. Let's lean into this, and it can be the foundation.
It's a great way to put it. We're leaning into failure right now. And with that being said, it's how do you respond? And with a lot of young guys, it's definitely a building moment, because if you're going to have success in the future, at least for me, you got to hit a wall and really look at yourself in the mirror and say, am I doing everything I can be to be the best me, to be the best in my position? Am I doing enough? And I think a lot of these guys are. I just think we need to refine and demand more, I guess, because on Saturday, it's different. You're playing, especially, coming games, you're playing against much more experienced teams. And, I've already said this a couple times, we have astronomical amount of talent, but it's translating all that talent into an organized effort on the field. And we have the players to do it, and I really believe that we're building that 2019 team again. But are we that team this year? Probably not. But we need to understand the process of, like you said, failure. once you hit that failure wall, you have to punch through it, or you have to overcome it. And that's something we're going to find out who we are in the next 3 weeks, because we're not really just that. The rest of the season, we got an SEC schedule, so we need to find out who's going to battle. And we may lose more games, and that's a part of it. But as long as we do and can control what we can control and go at every game and with a mindset and an attitude that we're going to demand more from ourselves, I think we'll be in a good spot this year and especially in following years, because so many guys will gain good experience from that.
Yeah, I can tell you really mean that too. Like, you're getting pretty passionate about it, and I can see that's it's such a results oriented world that we lived in, and people look at the results. But when you kind of, I think for me at least, winning a national championship helps you kind of see the bigger picture, because you can see the path that it took to get there. And mm-hmm. So this team may not be on that path that immediately, but you can kind of see the direction it's going in. I want to take you back to when you got to LSU and the program you walked into, the mindset that you had coming in, because you've worked your way from wanting to be a quarterback to being a tight end, being a punter. I mean, you found a way. Like, you found your path to where you're supposed to be at LSU. Was that your mentality coming in? It was like, hey, I just want to figure out where I fit in the program? Was it a completely different mentality?
I had to hit that wall. I got to a certain point when I was doing quarterback drills and whatnot and throwing the ball around, where I was like, shoot, Brandon Harris and Danny Etling look pretty good. Like, I'm too far behind to really make an impact at this position immediately. And then when I went to the tight end room, I was like, okay, I'm in a better fit now. I have a chance, an opportunity. We had so many guys injured at the time too. And then there were times where it was just me and Foster Morrow, because we had so many injuries at that position. And then when all those guys got healthy, I was okay. Well, now I don't know if I'm gonna be able to make an impact at this position. And so it rolled over into punting. And but no, you have to. I'm not gonna say evaluate on a daily basis, but after like you put in a good solid month of effort, it's like you got to kind of reflect and be like, all right, where am I now? Yeah. Where am I now? And it's like a constant self reflection every mm-hmm. I would say once a month, where you're like, okay, is this doable? Is this doable? Is this doable? And could I have played tight end here? I really believe I could have, but it would have been much further along than playing punter. And this all relates back to like when I first got here, my first season, we were 9-4, and this is the building aspect of this thing. That was considered a failed season, because the 2016 team with Jamal Adams, Leonard, the players we had were unbelievable. Yeah, I mean, we held Lamar Jackson. He didn't score a touchdown. Yeah. And now look at what he's doing in the league.
He's pretty good.
It's unbelievable. Like, that bowl game reflects on how good that team was. Yeah. And did we underperform? Of course. And so we went 9-4 that year, 9-4 the following year, 10-3, and won the Fiesta Bowl in 2018. And then this past year, it was a building process. And I would say we are back to the 2016 team, how we were a good team, but we underperformed. I would say we're younger, obviously, this year, but we're just not performing to the ability that we can. And I don't think any player on the team would disagree with that.
The thing that I keep picking up on your story is it's a good blend of, like, your mentality to life has been this really good blend of confidence, certainly athletic ability. Like, you can't just make up the athletic ability part. You have to have some talent. You have to have some confidence. But you also have to have a little bit of realism. And it's kind of balancing those three, because you see guys who are way too overconfident. They have no concept of how good or bad they are at something. You see guys that are extremely talented but don't have the confidence at all. And it's about finding kind of that blend, and that's where you can find out where you fit in. Is that something that you had even at a young age playing baseball? Is that something that you developed through your athletic career?
I would say I got better at that, because baseball and athletics were so easy leading up to being, early in my adult life when I turned 19, 20. I had to become a better evaluator then, because I was like, okay, now I'm here with guys throwing 100 miles an hour. Now, you're seeing the talent around you, and things have to change. You have to say, okay, what's my niche now? Do I be a sinker ball pitcher, because I'm not a power pitcher like Jameson Taillon? Do I need to throw a slider instead of a curveball, or whatever it may be? And baseball is a lot like that, because you see guys that are starting pitchers go to relief pitchers all the time, and more rare, but relief pitchers become starting pitchers all the time. It's all based on what your niche is, the team, the situation. And but obviously now I wasn't so much a power pitcher, but you see the pitchers now in the game, they're all power pitchers. I was more of a finesse pitcher. I was especially with the new everybody's saying the new baseball is a Major League Baseball. It's different. People are giving up more home runs, and I gave up more home runs without that bait in the new baseballs. It just happened that way for me. I left the ball up and throwing 92 and leaving it belt high up there is going to get hit hard. The realistic side of things is if you can't do it yourself, you can go to your coach. When I was a tight end, talking to Steve Ensminger would be real with me.
Yeah.
You know, and
straight shooter.
Exactly. Cam Cameron at the time was real with me. He suggested that I punt.
Yeah.
Cam Cameron was the guy who said, you know, I think you'd be a good punter. I've seen you messing around at practice. And that was honestly the guy that got the ball rolling was Cam Cameron telling me he thought I should punt. And you have to gauge things. And I could have gotten mad and said, no, screw you, Cam. I'm gonna play tight end. But when you really evaluate things based on your surroundings and you say, okay, this is my skill set, this is what I can do well, if you're able to have that introspective, like, okay, aha moment, you'll realize what it is you need to do. And like I said, there's conversations that need to be had for some people. You can ask your coach, and I use my coaches as much as I can, but you need to be a good self-evaluator, and that's not just in sports, that's in the business world too.
Yeah, all the skill sets you're talking about are extremely valuable they're vital when you get into the business world. Like just the audacity to send a letter, or what I keep calling it, a letter, an email to Sam Nader. Like sometimes in the business world, like you've got to take that risk and send that email to whoever, and sometimes it doesn't pay off, but sometimes it does, and you end up in the right spot. You touched on getting into punting, and I'm really curious how you got into punting, both with Cam Cameron. And I kind of want to dig in there a little bit and, like, what he saw. Were you just, like, kicking the ball around the practice field? But also, like, going back, because to me, as a writer who thinks in these kind of cheesy terms, like, you made your living off your arm for a little while, and now you make your living, so to speak, off your leg.
Right.
So how did you, go from throwing fastballs to kicking?
This person will love this shout-out. His name is Josh Tharp. He was a walk-on tight end with me. We would mess around before practice. We had a little, probably 15, 20 minutes before practice where we could do whatever we wanted. And me and him, he used to punt in high school.
Okay.
And we would punt back and forth to each other. And probably after 3-4 weeks, Cam Cameron would get out there with the offense and he'd start going over his play calls, his play sheet, and he would occasionally, I guess, pay attention to us. And then fast forward a little bit, we started doing this at practice when we had periods where we didn't have responsibilities and we were watching. And it was more so during the special teams period because I wasn't on special teams. I was a tight end. And me and Josh would punt then.
Yeah.
And that's when I think it got noticed when I started doing it outside, because in the indoor, you couldn't really hit it high. But outside, I could just really lay into it.
Yeah.
And that was when I think Cameron noticed, and he was like, dude, like, you got a bigger leg than I thought.
Yeah.
And that's when he said, why not try out and see where it goes? And you have a chance.
Yeah. Where does the leg talent come from? Were you a soccer player?
I was a soccer player. Okay. Yeah. I played soccer. And then that rolled over. I got a little too tall for soccer. I'm 6'5" now. But
yeah.
And then I punted in high school. And so it was a thing that I did, ongoing thing to maintain my leg strength in high school. And then obviously pitching's pretty good too, because every single time I am driving with this right leg, but I was a position player too, and you're doing fast twitch, running, explosive stuff all the time, and that keeps your leg in shape. But
yeah.
I had the original background, like you said, with soccer and then punting in high school.
When you transition from tight end to punter, there's natural leg talent. How much technique are you now learning? Like, did you have a good knowledge just because you punted in high school, or were you just kicking it in high school?
I needed to refine myself. I had a bad issue of landing on my kicking foot, so I'd swing and land on my kicking foot, and that was probably hindering some of my power. A lot of it was I needed to be more finesse. When I swing 70-80%, I hit my best balls. Now, don't get wrong, if I lay into one at 100 and hit it right,
yeah,
I'll crush it.
Yeah.
But laying into it at 100, I'm not going to hit the ball consistently every single time.
Like a golf swing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a golf mentality. If I hit that ball 80%, I'll get that nice spiral wobble. When it falls, it'll go 45 to 50 yards with a good hang. And can I hit a 60-yard 5-0? Yeah, but the risk of doing that every play is I'm going to have too many punts go 60 and then not enough, and then have a bunch of balls go 30
because
you mishit the ball. And so it was finding that happy medium scale, which I think after, you know, as many years as I've been here, I've come to that zone, the golf swing zone, I guess, where I'm given between 70% and 80% swing and hitting the ball perfectly. And that makes up for all the rest. You know, all you have, and then obviously the direction side of it's probably for some people the hardest, because you're not only are you worrying about a ball falling, you're worried about hitting your, you know, clubbing it with your foot at a certain angle so the ball spirals, but then you have to add the direction to it. And that, in over the course of 4 years, I've gotten pretty good at it.
Yeah.
It's just every year taking into account one thing and saying, I need to do this better. I need to, like that last year was, I need to be directionally better. And then but previous year, it was more like, I need to be more consistent striking the ball better.
Yeah.
And so 2018 was like that. And I hit the ball well in 2018, but I wasn't good directionally. Last year, I was better directionally, but I wasn't hitting the ball like I was in 2018. And now I've kind of gotten to the threshold of a little bit of both. I've got the direction and I've got the power. And that's compliments of Greg McMahon, because we've talked about this in depth and how we can improve our punting team.
You seem like a guy that, like, once you get passionate about something, like, you deep dive on it, whether it's punting or pitching or, I don't know, whatever random subject you've dove into lately. I kind of want to go in that direction, kind of away from football, and like, what are you interested in right now?
Shoot, I read too much. I'm competitive to a fault. My brothers would tell you that. My parents would tell you that. I'm ruthless when it comes to competition. And me and Joe had some heated ping pong matches.
Yeah, we've heard about the ping pong matches.
But it's an attitude. I don't know. There could be nothing on the line, but I'm gonna play. I'll tear my ACL almost trying to beat you. Like,
yeah.
That's knock on wood there, but like, it's just one of those things, a pride thing. A whole life, and you know, I had my older brothers beating up on me, and that was probably the best thing that happened in my life.
Yeah.
You know, Josh and Seth, they're 8 and 9 years older than me, and the competition was fierce when I was a kid, and then once I started getting 13, 14, they're like, all right, we need to dial it back, because he's actually pretty good now.
Yeah.
But no, it's the competitiveness side of me, and it's not just competitive in sports. I know that I'm a competitive person in general, and I want to. It's probably at times it does get me in trouble, but I'd rather be overly competitive than not competitive enough.
Yeah.
And my mom used to criticize the, you know, let your brothers win every now and then. Da da da. Like, no, it's good for them. Like, I got this from my older brothers. They need to get it too.
Yeah.
And. But no, I don't want to say obsession. That's not a good word, but I can't think of a better word. I get like an obsession, and I have to do things right.
Yeah.
I can't cut corners. I can't, there's no shortcuts.
Yeah.
It just is what it is. If I'm going to be a good punter, I'm going to be a good punter, and I'm going to do everything it takes to be a good punter. And then, and that's not always the technical side for me. I would say Cade is a much more technical person than I am. I'm a more mentality-driven person.
Yeah.
Cade's a more technicality-driven person. And I don't have the best mechanics of a punter, and I don't have I probably don't have the best mentality, but what I do works for me. And that's what people need to understand. There's a right way to do things, but there's a bunch of different ways you can get to doing it the right way. There's not one way and one path you have to do things to be successful. And but no, away from sports, I don't know what it is I'm going to do after sports are over with, after my jersey's taken away. But I plan on being just as competitive in that field as I am in sports.
All right, man. Appreciate your time.
No problem.
Like nights of old, we fight to hold the glory of the purple and gold. Come on, you Tigers. I said fight, fight, fight. Victory for